Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, Chapter 9, Text 39, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Chai Srila Prabhupada.
Atev Shabfal Deha Jare Tare Kaya Hok Lok Ajar Amare. Translation. Distribute this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Let people eat these fruits and ultimately become free from old age and death. This is spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's, we could say, Krishnadas Kaviraj's paraphrasing of, well, all of Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks, is Krishnadas Kaviraj's paraphrasing of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. This is an allegory of Chaitanya. We're describing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is here described as both the tree of devotional service and the gardener. So when he says distribute these fruits, that means the fruits of love of Krishna. It's allegorical. So, purport. The Krishna consciousness movement introduced by Lord Chaitanya is extremely important because one who takes to it becomes eternal, being freed from birth, death, and old age. People do not recognize. Atev shab fal deho jare tare kaya hok lok ajara mare. Distribute this Krishna conscious movement all over the world. Let people eat these fruits and ultimately become free from old age and death. This is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's paraphrasing, as he does throughout Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's words. This is the statement about eating these fruits refers to the allegory being described in this chapter of how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is both the tree and the gardener of the tree of pure devotional service. So when he says eat these fruits, let people eat these fruits, that means let them taste the nectar of pure devotional service. Purport. The Krishna consciousness movement introduced by Lord Chaitanya is extremely important because one who takes to it becomes eternal, being free from birth, death, and old age. People do not recognize that the real distresses in life are the four principles of birth, death, old age, and disease. They are so foolish that they resign themselves to these four miseries, not knowing the transcendental remedy of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from all misery, but because they are enchanted by the illusory energy, people do not take this movement seriously. Therefore, those who are actually servants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must seriously distribute this movement all over the world to render the greatest benefit to human society. Of course, animals and other lower species are not capable of understanding this movement, but if even a small number of human beings take it seriously, then by their chanting loudly, all living entities, including even trees, animals, and other lower species, will be benefited. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inquired from Haridas Thakur how he was to benefit living entities other than humans, Srila Haridas Thakur replied that the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is so potent that if it is chanted loudly, everyone will benefit, including the lower species of life. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurinita Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Shrestham Manamapi Shakti Putra Matra Surupam Rupam Tasyaga Jamurupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum tam natosmi. Vandeham shri guru shiata paragamalam shri gurum vaishnavangscha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lanta Shri Vishakha Vitascha. Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Rama Rama,
Hare Hare.
This section of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is very enthusing for devotees who have dedicated their lives to preaching Krishna consciousness. And I remember when this was first released, because now when you join the Krishna consciousness movement, all these books are available already, but when I joined, many of them weren't available, and they'd come out one by one. Or in the case of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, many of them came out all at once. So it was very exciting waiting for the latest book. And then when the new book came, usually just one copy would come to a temple, and then the GBC would have it first, and he'd be expected to read it quickly so that everyone else could, and it would gradually go down to those who had already read that far. So this is very exciting for the devotees, because Srila Prabhupada, he always said that this movement is a, there was a famous quote, that this movement is a pushing movement. He said that, my Guru Maharaj is pushing me, I am pushing you, and you should push others. It means push them toward Krishna. Yeah, doesn't mean you have to push back to Mark in the back right now. That's, it means not physically pushing. Maybe sometimes also, but that's not the meaning of this. And we saw that Srila Prabhupada pushed himself. And he certainly pushed his disciples also. And they became extremely blissful by being pushed toward Krishna. And they wanted to push others. And it appears that in our naivete of the time, sometimes we, or maybe all the time, we pushed others in a way that wasn't the most expert way of pushing. And as a result, many people became upset with this movement. Srila Prabhupada's response was to push more. I have one particular instance in mind. In 1977, there was a major court case in New York. And it was major means it was all over the news. Now the Hare Krishna movement is brainwashing. And the devotees became very perturbed. And Adi Keshava Swami, who was the GBC there, grew out his hair long and he wanted to go to court in a suit. And he came to visit Prabhupada in Mayapur to get direction. And Prabhupada told him, no, shave your head, go to court dressed as a sannyasi, and tell them that your society is a cat and dog society. I won't say exactly what Prabhupada said, because women are here. It's extremely graphic. And not the words that you would expect of sadhu, but Prabhupada said them. And Prabhupada took it as a great preaching opportunity. That people are upset, Prabhupada said, that means our movement is important. So anyway, whether we are as aggressive as that, or nowadays we're not, but this preaching of Krishna consciousness should go on. Preaching of Krishna consciousness, specifically Krishna consciousness. Many people nowadays are interested in higher consciousness, in the 1960s when Srila Prabhupada first came to America, it was mostly hippies who were taking interest in him and his teachings, and they were interested in altered states of consciousness, particularly altered by psychedelic narcotics. And it seems that Srila Prabhupada used this word consciousness a lot, and Krishna consciousness, he could have used another term. But it seems that he used this term because it was a buzzword among hippies. It's a very important word, consciousness. It's a very important to understand what consciousness is in general terms and what our consciousness should be in specific terms. Consciousness in general terms means awareness is the one understanding. It also borders on the meaning of conscientiousness, of being responsible. And it means, awareness, there's general awareness and there's also specific awareness. So if you say someone's ecologically conscious, it means they have a specific awareness. So Krishna conscious means a specific awareness of Krishna. So it's a very important word because consciousness is what is it that distinguishes humans from animals. And, living beings from non-living beings. And that's also what distinguishes humans from animals, that humans have consciousness that can go beyond simply animal functions. So it's a very important term to understand, especially because the regnant or the ruling, the predominant theory in the world is that life is a product of matter and consciousness is hardly even considered as a subject of study. They just presume it's function. Well, of course, there are different psychologists and they have different theories, but the very nature of consciousness that it's hardly even studied at all. It's very interesting to note that even though there is in the schools and colleges the theory that is taught as being actually knowledge is the basis of everything that we should know, is that life is a product of matter. And it's very interesting to note that despite this being the standard, orthodox, they don't even think it's a theory, they take it as a fact. I mean, they say it's a theory, but practically they take it as a fact. It's very interesting to note that despite that, many, many people don't accept it. They may not openly rebel against it, but by anyone who has any interest in religion or God or spiritual life, maybe even unknown to themselves, they are rebelling against the idea that's been pumped into them since birth that life is a product of matter. And it's a very interesting juncture in social history that so many people, in America, social history of America, so many people are interested and to various degrees of seriousness, they're interested in higher consciousness. Ecological consciousness is one kind of higher consciousness. Spiritual consciousness, many people have interest. But they don't have any answers. They don't have any real answers. Buddhism has become popular. Christianity, many Christians are increasingly being influenced by what we would, or what some people would call Eastern thought. So it's actually a very good time for preaching Krishna consciousness. The 1960s and 1970s were a good time. In one of the Vyasa Puja offerings, I saw that it was written that Srila Prabhupada had said that Krishna arranged the hippie movement for me to preach Krishna consciousness. But after the hippie movement came the yuppie era, in which people, the general trend of people became extremely materialistic. So the devotees who are preaching all of a sudden found that the preaching field wasn't as good as it was before. Went through a very materialistic era. Of course, this is very generally we're speaking. But the yuppie era, of course, there are always people who are interested in making lots of money as their only goal of life. But that era is over now, and you can say more about this than me, because you're preaching in that kind of field. I'm just saying my general impressions. There are many people who are interested, and you have this experience almost every day on the campuses, which is why you go there. There are many young, educated people who are interested to various degrees in spiritual life. And Gauranga Prasad said yesterday he was disappointed how many people came to our program. But that anyone came and they stayed with us, well, that one woman for the whole three hours. And that they all participated enthusiastically. They all listened to the lecture and they all participated enthusiastically in the chanting. Demonstrates that there is tremendous scope, and you're finding that wherever you go, all over America, right? I mean, some places may be better than others, but in redneck country, in Bible Belt, in everywhere, isn't it?
Yes, everywhere I go, the books just fly out.
Yeah, people. My schedule is that my last stop on this tour of America is Boston, where Madhavendra Puri Prabhu. I'm told he goes out on Boston Commons and puts a book table with a sign, spiritual books, and he stands there in devotee clothes, and people just come up and take them. And Vijay Prabhu, he also, his standard technique is to go on a campus, put a book table, sit there in his devotee clothes, and wait for people to come, and he sells many books. And it's not only in America, it seems that there are many reports from Devamrit Maharaj's disciples. If you see the Sankirtan, what's that called? Book Distribution Nectar, that conference on Pam Ho. You all getting that? There are many nice stories of book distribution from around the world. Many of them come from Australia and New Zealand. And we see the pattern repeated in the Western countries. Yesterday, a couple of days ago, we had a report from England. There is tremendous interest. So there is very great scope for spreading Krishna consciousness in America. And you can find the ways and means of injecting it. I mean, the basic process is to, as you were saying yesterday, to go and meet people, give them Srila Prabhupada's books, and there may be other books also. Like in Gujarat last year, I showed you that book of Sahotra Swami, that Dimensions of Good and Evil. That would be a real winner among the students of America. Unfortunately, due to ecclesiastical considerations, political or whatever. It's not likely to be adopted as a book for mass distribution, yeah.
What if you wrote a book like that?
Hmm?
What if you wrote and published a book like that on a mass scale?
Well, maybe you could print that book here. 5,000 copies, 10,000 copies. That could be done. You could print it right here in America. That's possible. Or we could print it in India and ship it. But you might run into some opposition of sorts from within our movement. But anyway, that's there anyway. Well, that's just one example. I also feel that the hidden history of the human race, that should be widely distributed. Very important book. Very provocative. That's good. Yeah?
We're in Sedona, Arizona.
Mm.
In one of the magazines there in the health, it's like the Whole Food Store.
Yeah.
They had Dhrutakarma, his article in there.
He has, Dhrutakarma Prabhu has articles in many alternative kind of magazines. So, and of course, the main books to distribute are Prabhupada's books, no doubt. But there are other books which would be very effective. But anyway, the main point is that the books, you go out, you meet people, and you meet interested people, and then you're gradually cultivating them. And like Dr. Mark here told me his story yesterday of how he came to Krishna consciousness. So there's no reason why there can't be a renaissance of Krishna consciousness in America. I mean, the scope is tremendous. I mean, that's what I see just from a little taste. And you're going on the student on the campus with the students, but in New Talavan, I was speaking with Shiki Mahiti Prabhu, who was there tending our dying godbrother, Ramakeli Prabhu. They're both, what do you call them, black-bodied Afro-American. And Shiki Mahiti was reminiscing to me how they used to do preaching among the Afro-Americans. I believe it was in the 1980s. And it was very effective, but somehow that was in Chicago. So I said to him, well, why don't you do it again? And then there's good scope there. And I said to him, but better you go. They'll listen to you more easily than me. But he disagreed with that. All right. And then the Latino community, very, very good scope. They can take to Krishna consciousness very, very easily. They love chanting and dancing and prasadam. So there's just tremendous scope in prayer. And you were saying to me yesterday how you'd like to go to the churches and speak with people. And because many Christian, even though they're a little hardcore, but they're willing to talk. In one airport, I can't even remember which one it was. I've been through so many airports in the last few weeks. But one man came up to me and said, oh, you look like something religious. I said, yeah, it was Hare Krishna. And he said, well, I'm a Christian. And then we talked a little bit, but nowadays most Christians, or many of them, have learned that it's more effective if they want to get their message across. They can't be just so blunt. So that means you can talk with them, and that's good for us. That you can talk to them. So you were hopeful of going in churches, speaking with people, and presenting them with this, and gradually they can come around. Who is that? There's another. There's. Dvibhuj Prabhu, one of my godbrothers who I met in New Talavan. I never even knew he existed. I didn't even know his name before. But he has a herb business. He makes herbal medicine. So he comes in contact with many people. And he told me there's one evangelic Christian who's been in contact with, and over the last few years, he's one of his customers, and he's been talking to her, and she's just coming to the point of, he said, of admitting in her own mind that Krishna consciousness has got a knowledge that is beyond that which she has of God, which I was trying to say to that Carol yesterday. So, yeah, there's just tremendous scope. So, I can just encourage you to go on spreading it more and more. And the repeated experience is that we can present Krishna consciousness straightforwardly. Last night in my lecture, I was talking about this supreme reality and this and that, but I was going to come to Krishna, but then one of the people I saw was getting restless, so I just, as you saw, I just quickly put at the end, I spoke about the supreme reality being Krishna and this and that, but as you were saying, in America, maybe more than, I think definitely more than any other Western country, we can directly talk about God, and many people don't get upset. And many people agree also that God is misrepresented, as Carol was yesterday saying, in rather gross terms. So yeah, these little pamphlets, Krishna, the Reservoir of Pleasure. I often think that the Nectar of Devotion would be a great book to distribute, because it's all the nectar, and the rules and regs also. Some years ago, this was maybe 15 or 20 years ago, devotees, they had in Britain had a company do a survey among the readers of Prabhupada's books, among the public. It was their job, and they did it to find out which books the public liked best. And the answer surprised the devotees. Can you guess what it was?
Krishna book.
No, not Krishna book. You know what it is? You already heard me say it. The Nectar of Instruction. And the reason given was that it gives a very clear understanding of what Krishna consciousness is, and it gives specific rules, just like that. Prabhupada states right in the beginning of the purport of the first verse, no meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, no going to cinemas and all this kind of thing. So, yeah, all these books, we should distribute them. And also this speaking to people individually, public speaking programs, they're very important. So just to let people know that we do have a philosophy, and we do have a very cogent philosophy. And also to distinguish ourselves from the others, the Mayavadis, and one reason may be that we can go and we say we're monks and we dress as devotees and it's accepted, whereas in the 60s and 70s people thought we were crazy. In the 80s people didn't like us, it seems, many people. But maybe one reason that monks are accepted is because there was some movie about Buddhism that became very popular, and maybe this is 20 years ago or so, and Dalai Lama has become well accepted. Now, of course, we don't endorse Dalai Lama's teachings. I mean, they're not all bad, but his, I mean, Buddhism, we're not Buddhists. We're not voidists. But that he is, in the Western world, one of the most socially respectable and respected people. And he's a monk, and he's an Eastern monk. That also plays to our advantage in the sense that people are willing to accept us dressed like this, whereas in the 60s and 70s, many people were just turned off by it, and they just thought it was crazy, and sometimes they pulled guns on devotees, and they're afraid. But it is important also to just like this. I was telling about this Christian I met, and he said, "Are you? What is this? Is that Buddhism?" And I said, "No, we're monotheistic." So they're pleased to hear that. So there's very good scope. So do it. We have to do it carefully. Just like we see that people who are interested in spirituality, they're mostly, they already have a preconditioning of Eastern impersonal ideas as they have been presented in the Western world. And that is an obstacle in preaching Krishna consciousness as is, but then preaching means that people have misconceptions that we have to address. So, anyway, you're here. Krishna's put you here. So please, you can go on preaching this message and bring people. And the basic process, chanting, dancing, going out in public, distributing these books, very potent. So this public chanting and dancing also, we can do this more and more. Dhanavir Maharaj, he had a very good program. He started this Bhakta program, first in Los Angeles, and the next place was in London. So he had noted that we used to make so many devotees, people being attracted to our chanting parties, our public chanting parties. But so much emphasis had been put on book distribution that they weren't joining from our chanting parties, and people, they don't even know us. The chanting parties in themselves are they're very good publicity, because no one can fail to notice it, and there are so many advertisements and all over the world for showing devotees. And it used to be that it was so funny, we used to get arrested in London all the time for going out chanting, but on the tourism adverts in other countries, they'd show for London, they'd show Big Ben and I don't know what else, the Tower Bridge, Tower of London, and devotees chanting. But they were showing that as like the sights of London to see, but we were getting arrested for it. They say, "Hey, we're boosting the economy and we're a tourist attraction." Anyway, we don't get arrested nowadays, not much anyway. So it's a very good and something else I'm getting. I'll get back to Dhanavir Maharaj in a second. Also, I told you this also. But a devotee in secular dress was attending for secular reasons, means for earning their livelihood, was attending a course on advertising. And the instructor, this is in England also, the instructor gave the example. He showed a picture of the devotees chanting in public and said, "This brilliant advertising, you see. It immediately catches everyone's attention," and he said, "It's completely novel. There's nothing like it," but he just saw it from an advertising point of view. But that's a fact. We want to advertise, right? We want to advertise Krishna consciousness. So Dhanavir Maharaj, he made this program that you take the new bhaktas out chanting. You make new bhaktas. How do you engage them? What do they do? You got Bhakta Steve crawling up the walls. If you try and keep him inside. And you may have someone who's very shy, either way, whichever way, you take them out chanting, have a senior experience about it, and then you get that engages and immediately puts them in the preaching consciousness and out there doing actually preaching without actually contacting and speaking to people in which they're not maybe ready for so much. So this way, you got the bhakta program, training the newcomers, and also having high nam parties, which are so important. So these are just some thoughts. I'm very inspired by the preaching field here. It's very good everywhere. Wherever I go, the preaching field is very good. But the English-speaking countries are obviously more accessible to me. So in other places I go to, then I have to, has to be translated. I have to speak in very, very simple English so people can understand in some other countries. Of course, I all the Americanisms I don't always understand, but basically I understand the language here. And in India also, in North India at least, I get by with Hindi. But it's very enlivening preaching field, so you can find the ways and means to talk to people, and it's all right. When I finished, you can keep your hand down for now. Everyone's an individual. Everyone's different, but there are standard or many general responses that you meet, just like. What was that you were telling me when you say that? What was it you were telling me yesterday? It's a standard thing that you're saying to Christians. Oh, you put to them that that God. What happened to people? If you say Jesus is the only way, then what happened to people before Jesus, or people who never heard of Jesus? And they quote. I put that to Christians also. I don't meet as many as you because I'm mostly in India. But their standard reply is to quote from the Bible that you see God's manifestations in nature and all this kind of thing. And then you say, well, there are other ways then Jesus is not the only way, if there are others. But more and more, just the people are realizing that there are other godly, saintly people outside of the tradition. And maybe the Dalai Lama is contributing in that way also, although I personally don't consider him to be saintly. I consider him to be a big hypocrite because he goes everywhere talking of peace and eats lots of meat every day. And he should know by the laws of karma that eating slaughterhouse meat is the cause of... that in itself is non-peace. That's violence to others. That is the cause of further violence. But he's seen as a saintly person. So, anyway, Hare Krishna. What did you want to say, Steve?
Maharaj, what is the proper... when I'm going out on books, I'm trying to prepare myself for a long day ahead, and want to make sure that my mind is set. What should the proper mentality be? And
proper mentality comes from sadhana, from following bhakti sadhana, the process, standard morning program. The mentality should be in all circumstances that I am a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his servants. That's the basic mentality. So that is fortified by this daily program of hearing and chanting. And that we want to benefit others by giving them this knowledge. Our movement got a lot of bad publicity because devotees got the mentality in many cases was to get money out of them. That was part of the actually wrong mentality that devotees adopted. Yeah, we do want to take their Lakshmi and engage it in Krishna's service. And the more they give, the better for them. And it's good for the movement also. We can use it in Krishna's service. But if people see us as exploitive and greedy, then they'll be disgusted, actually. Instead of having a good impression, they'll be disgusted that these people are coming with a spiritual message, but they're not spiritual people. That's what they'll perceive. So we have to be careful about that. We want to encourage people, if they want to give donations, very good. We can encourage them, but not in a way that that makes them distrust us.
How would you ask for a donation for a book?
And just that's what you do. You ask them, give a donation. Please give something to help with the cost of these books and with the and so. It's been a long time since I did one-on-one books in the West. It'd be good for me to do that, probably. But I think mostly people, they understand, right, that they're supposed to give something, isn't it? By their very approach.
I think we're propagating a capitalist like capitalism. Like, or I heard a gentleman say, just because we ask for money for the books.
Yeah, there's this idea that if you're asking for money, that you're materialistic. That's a misunderstanding. Some people have that. Some people have that idea. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially if you don't make it clear that you want a donation, you give it to them, and they think it's optional. Think you are giving it for free, but then.
So what do you say? Yeah. Or you could say printing and peripheral expenses also.
So much, so and so. And then if they can't give that much, I say, is there can you take this or paper? Usually they're 99.9%. They say, oh, yes, I totally understand. But once in a while they say, I really want this one. I say, okay, yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.